Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Today is going to deal with the Magi from the East. It's a very exciting lesson, I think, because the traditional account of the wise men is somewhat problematical when you look at the Bible itself. And so I hope that you'll reflect back on me and all the pictures you see in the Nativity and that kind of thing, and I think some of them are just a little bit off base. So get your Bible and turn with me to Matthew chapter 2. Matthew chapter 2. Now when Jesus was born at Bethlehem in Judea in the days of King Herod, and I want to stop at that first little phrase, Bethlehem is a very small, insignificant city. The only note to fame it has, it was the home of Boaz and Ruth, and of course they were the ancestors of David, the king of Israel, and so it was the birthplace of David, king of Israel. But it's very small. So small in the Old Testament, matter of fact, that nobody was even drafted from Bethlehem because it was such a small village. It means Beth, house, Lehem, house of bread. And it says Bethlehem in Judea because there was a Bethlehem up in Galilee in the territory of Zebulun. So this is to make it a different, show you which Bethlehem it is. Now it says in the days of King Herod, this is Herod the Great, the first Herod. He was half Idumean and half Jewish. Idumean would be from Edom. And he was always rather sensitive about that. The Jews kind of got on his case about him not being Jewish and being king. And he was a unique kind of combination of a very severe, cruel man and a very kind, forward-looking ruler. King Herod had a lot of building projects. Matter of fact, the beautiful temple in Jesus' day was a result of King Herod's rebuilding the old temple. It took him 46 years. Took a lot of money, a lot of time, but that he did that to try to endear himself to the Jews. Matter of fact, one time there was a famine in Judea and around Jerusalem. He spent his own money to buy food for his people, so he was a very kind ruler in some ways. But in other ways, he was a very, very mean, cruel man. He killed most of his sons because he was paranoid about them trying to take his place of power. The Roman emperor once said when he heard about it, it's better to be Herod's pig than Herod's son. Both the words sound very close together in Greek. Also, want you to know that he was, when he started to get older and was afraid he was going to die, he was afraid nobody would cry for him, so he had all the Jewish leaders put in prison at Jericho under orders to kill all of them when he died so that somebody would weep for him. So you can tell he was a pretty wild fellow. Now, the next little phrase, the stargazers in my translation, but you probably have the magi, or the wise men. Now, it is a Persian word, an Iranian word. It comes from, basically it's a Median word. Media was part of the kingdom of Persia. And these Medians had tried to take over the Persian Empire but failed before. And so they became a group of wise men or teachers or magicians or astrologers. Sometimes these were called Chaldeans. Daniel was a Chaldean and the leader of this group during the period of Babylon. And so these people were basically the educated class, the religious class of the Persian Empire. Now tradition has that there are several of them from different continents. We don't know what their background is. Probably they're Zoroastrians. That's the religion of Persia. It is a religion that has many similarities to Judaism and Christianity. So here God apparently revealed himself to these men for a specific purpose. Notice it says stargazers came from the east to Jerusalem. And asked, where is he that is born king of the Jews? And we saw his star when it arose and have come to worship him. Of all the people to ask, Herod wasn't it. He was paranoid as he could be about his own family, much less about someone who had been born king of the Jews with their own star, no less. And so he really got concerned about it. Now, the King James Bible says, we saw his star in the east. Now, think for a minute. If they were in the east, Iran or Persia, and they saw the star in the east, they sure wouldn't come west, they'd go east. That's not a good translation. They saw his star rise, okay? And that's a better translation. They came to worship him. So apparently, we don't know, maybe they're Jews. We just don't know they're Gentiles for sure. You see, there were many, many Jews in Persia because of the Assyrian exile. And there were many Jews in Babylon because of the Babylonian exile. And Daniel was there. And so there's a real possibility they knew the Old Testament. Or maybe it was just a group of people who had no contact with the biblical revelation, but God revealed himself to them. Now, notice if you would where it says, in verse 3. And now when King Herod heard of it, he was disturbed, and all Jerusalem with him. Well, you can imagine the way this guy acted. When he got nervous, everybody got nervous. And so it caused a real stir. In verse 4 he says, "And so he called together all the high priests and scribes of the people." Now this is a brief designation for the Sanhedrin. The full designation would be the high priests, the scribes, and the elders. This is often used in the New Testament to refer to the Sanhedrin. So he called the whole group of 70 together. He wanted to ask them a question. Now my translation has, "He anxiously asked them." It's an imperfect tense. He asked them over and over and over and over and over and over again. He wanted to make sure. He asked them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "At Bethlehem in Judea, for this is what the prophet says." Now verse 6 in your Bible is a quote from Micah chapter 5 verse 2. It's a loose quote. It's not from the Hebrew, and it's not from the Septuagint. It seems that Matthew has combined Micah 5:2 with 2 Samuel 5:2, where David is called a shepherd of Israel, and he changes the word from ruler to shepherd in the last line. Now I want to stop just for a moment of my exegesis of chapter 2 to turn quickly to Micah chapter 5, verse 2. I want to tell you, I think the validity of the Bible can really be established from this verse. Micah was a contemporary of Isaiah, lived about 750 to 700 B.C. He lived in a time of great prosperity in the kingdom, but a growing unrighteousness and rebellious spirit. And during this time, he prophesied that Bethlehem Ephrathah would be the birthplace of the Messiah. You say, "Well, Bob, I just don't believe your date." Okay, so you don't believe that Micah was written when it was. The Septuagint is a Greek translation of the Hebrew Scriptures, begun about 450 B.C., and when it was complete, we're not sure. Some say as late as 150 B.C. So let's just take the most pessimistic estimation, and that is the Septuagint was finished in 150 B.C. I think it's finished much earlier than that, but let's just say if you're the most pessimistic person, and you can check any secular source you want to, any encyclopedia, any history book, anything like that, Micah appears in the Septuagint. So at least 150 years before the birth of Christ, his birthplace was pinpointed in a very insignificant little village. Friends, this is one of the unique accounts of the Bible. It's called predictive prophecy. I think 700 years before Jesus was born, his birthplace was predicted. Even if it's 150 years, think about it. This is one of the evidences for the Bible being a supernatural book. I tell you what. If you're listening to the program right now and you would like a tape on a sermon I did on Micah chapter 5 called "Too Much for a Coincidence, if you'll just write me and say, "I heard the program," send me the tape on "Too Much for a Coincidence" from Micah 5, and I'll be happy to do that. On the back, I'll put a tape on "How Can You Trust the Bible?" I think it'd be very helpful to you to establish that the Bible is really a supernatural book. I hope you'll write me and ask for that. Now, notice, if you will, where it mentions that, let's get into verse 7. "And when Herod secretly sent for the stargazers and found out from them exactly the time the star appeared." Now, why did he want to know the time? Herod is going to have all the children in Bethlehem killed. And so he wants to know the time the star appeared so he can kind of figure how old the baby is. "So he sent them to Bethlehem with this order: Go and carefully search for the child. And when you find him, bring back word to me that I too may come and do him homage." Well, that was a bald-faced lie. He had no idea, didn't he, but slitting his throat. But he sent him to Bethlehem, got him that far. Now, in verse 9, we have what many people think is the key to this, because they say this is a legend or a fable and non-historical. And this is the verse they say that proves that. Notice it says, "After listening to the king, they started on their journey, and the star which they had seen rise led them on until it came and stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they were thrilled with ecstatic joy." Now, did the star really lead them? You know, your presuppositions about life, to a large extent, govern what you believe and disbelieve about our world. If you believe in a closed system of natural law, it's going to be very hard for you to allow for miraculous occurrence like this. If you believe that in a system that is open, in other words, affirming the possibility of supernatural action in our world, this won't be too hard. It seems to me that the obvious straightforward meaning of the text here is this was not written by Matthew to be taken figuratively. The star led them, the star stopped. That seems more than simply just the normal occurrence of stars. Many, many people have tried to figure out when exactly the star appeared. Now, we have a few clues, but not very many. First of all, the dating of B.C. and A.D. is off. That was done by a monk about the Middle Ages, and he just did it wrong. He had the wrong date when he was figuring up the date for the Roman Empire then. We know that Herod the Great died in 4 B.C. Now, he has to be alive when Jesus was born to fulfill this historically. So Jesus must have been born 6, 5 B.C., something like that. Many folks try to go back and check the constellations and see if Jupiter and Saturn were lined up or if Halley's Comet came by or what was on the horizon. Friends, I don't think we can do that. I think we just must admit that we don't understand a whole lot about this star and what it was and how it functioned and all of that. I think all too often we try to fit the normal occurrences of life into supernatural occurrences, and we always get balled up in that. I don't think we can decide what it was that caused this star and how this star acted. Now, notice it says, they went into the house. Now, Jesus was supposedly born in a stable. Justin Martyr, who lived about 150 A.D., very close to the time of Christ, said that he was born in a cave, and that's very possible. Bethlehem is built on a limestone ridge, and many of the houses had dug-out caves they used for animals underneath their home or to the side of their home, and probably Jesus was born in something like this. But now he's in a house. And notice the word that's used here. They went into the house and saw the child with his mother. Always the child is mentioned first. So maybe he's in the home of a relative. But a time has passed from him being in the manger. You see, those nativity scenes that show the wise men on one side and the shepherds on the other is simply not a biblical but a traditional rendering of that account. The word here for child is not the word for infant or babe, but the word for a young child. You say, how old was he? We can't tell exactly how old he was, but with these expensive gifts the wise men are going to give to Mary and Joseph for the baby, it would have been very selfish of Mary to have offered the cheapest sacrifice of purification that we learn from Luke 40 days after the birth of Christ. So it must have been at least 40 days. We're going to find a little later that Herod had every child 2 years old and down killed. Now that means it's possible they would have as much as 2 years between Jesus' birth and the coming of the wise men. But what's more probable is, knowing Herod, he wanted little leeway. So he killed them a little bit older to make sure he would do that. So we don't know exactly how old the child was, but he is older now. Notice it says in verse 11, they opened up their treasure sacks and presented him with gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now this is where we get a lot of traditional interpretation. Tradition says there's three wise men, and they're from different continents like Asia and Persia and Africa. That's why one is black and different colors. We can't tell anything like that. There's three gifts. I didn't say there's three wise men. Matter of fact, from Tertullian, an early church father, says that they were three kings. He gets that from Isaiah chapter 60, verse 3. He didn't say they're kings at all. The only king involved here is Herod, apparently. So this is a lot of a tradition that builds itself around these stories. They even have the traditional names of these people, but we don't get any of that in the biblical record. A lot of folks try to make a lot to do out of gold and frankincense and myrrh and try to say gold symbolizes kingship and frankincense, like priesthood, and myrrh, his death. Friends, these things were used for a number of different things in the Bible itself as well as in the Old Testament. Frankincense is a whitish fluid that comes out of trees and is used for several kinds of things. Myrrh also comes from a tree. A very beautiful, wonderful fragrance used for weddings and, as well as burial. So we can't lock down exactly what these gifts mean. I don't think we ought to try to. Notice in verse 12. Then as they had been divinely warned in a dream not to return to Herod. Hey, look at this. God spoke to these guys, and they're not Jews. Matter of fact, I think it's important that God spoke to these people to show that the Jews were not the only ones that received a direct revelation from God. Balaam in the Old Testament was not Jewish, and he received a revelation from God. Jethro, another example of God revealing to people who were not Jewish. So I think it says, the minute we say God doesn't do this and that, I think he just enjoys doing it to show us how we just can't tell. And here God is in a dream, just like he was speaking to Joseph in a dream, spoke to these wise men and said, don't go home that way. Go home another way. And they did. Now before I get to verse 13 that deals with Jesus' flight to Egypt, here's my announcer, Phil Crenshaw, with some opportunities for you.
You are listening to the International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated with pastor-teacher Bob Utley. We hope you are enjoying the lesson today, and Bob will return in just a minute. All of us involved with this ministry want to wish you and yours a meaningful and joyous holiday season. Would you like to receive a free weekly outline of these Sunday School lessons?
Additional verse-by-verse explanation is available, written by Bob, to assist you in a better historical background of the text. Also, these notes will assist you in understanding difficult Bible words and their origin. It is yours without charge when you write International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas. That's L-U-B-B-O-C-K. Lubbock, Texas, 79408. Why not write us now for this free weekly outline at this address? International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas, 79408. We encourage your prayer support to undergird this ministry. Also, we appreciate your gifts and free will offerings that keep this broadcast on the air. The outreach of this broadcast is growing and is the result of many faithful listeners who are praying and supporting this work. Would you join us as a prayer partner and contributing supporter? All gifts are tax deductible. For those who contribute to this ministry during the month of December, we will send you a 90-minute cassette tape on chapters 13 and 15 of our verse-by-verse Bible study on the book of the Revelation. Or, if you would prefer, a cassette tape on the Christmas story, according to John. We are praying that these tapes will be a blessing to your life. Would you tell a friend about this exegetical Bible study, which follows the Sunday school lessons of most churches? Our address, once again, International Sunday School Lesson Incorporated, Post Office Box 2711, Lubbock, Texas, 79408. And now, here's Bob.
Thank you, Phil. And don't forget to ask that special tape I've offered to you free on Too Much for a Coincidence from Micah chapter 5, verse 2 through 6. Now, also notice, if you would, that Jesus has to flee to Egypt because of Herod's antics. And the angel tells Joseph to do it, and Joseph gets up and takes the child that night. And then Matthew says that this is fulfillment of prophecy. And he quotes out of Hosea chapter 11, verse 1. Now, two things I want to mention. Number one, in verse 13, says, "For Herod is going to search for the child to destroy him." You know, Herod's got to be some kind of fool. Does he really think that if God's involved with this, that he's going to send some soldiers and kill this baby? I mean, you know, sometimes I think we act so dumb in trying to thwart God's will. If we really believe that God's involved in our world, don't you know it's impossible to stop the hand of God? We're all the time doing that, Herod and us too. So, it's ridiculous. Here's Herod running around trying to kill God's anointed. Well, this quote from the Old Testament is based on rabbinical exegesis and not on context and historical grammatical background, because what he's picking up on is the little word son, okay? Now, the word son is used in Hosea 11:1 as for the nation of Israel, who God brought out of Egypt and delivered them and gave them the promised land. There's a beautiful passage in Hosea chapter 11, verse 1. Let me just read part of it to show you how much God loves the nation, and now it's personified in the Messiah. "When Israel was a youth, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. The more they called them, the more they went from them." Speaking about the prophets and their rebelliousness. Look at verse 3. "Yet it was I who taught Ephraim to walk. I took them in my arms, but they did not know that I healed them. I led them with cords of a man, with bonds of love, and I became as the one who lifts the yoke from their jaws, and I bit down and fed them." What a beautiful picture of God's love and care for the nation of Israel. I think the context here is reflecting God's same love and care for the baby Jesus. In verse 16, it says, "And Herod, because he saw that a trick had been played on him," but this word trick can mean mockery or poked fun at, "he really got upset. He was angry and sent the soldiers to kill all the baby boys in Bethlehem 2 years and down." Now, exactly how old Jesus is, again, we can't know. I would say he's at from 2 years to 2 months, somewhere in there. And any closer on that's very difficult to get. Many times the church has made a lot about this, the slaughter of the innocents and thousands were killed. No, it's probably around 20. It's a very small town. Wouldn't have many. It's only boys, not all the children. So it just had the boys, 2 years old and down, wouldn't be that large of a number. But what a tragedy that must have been. Now, notice in verse 17 where Matthew quotes another Old Testament passage. Why is he doing that? Matthew is writing to the Jewish audience. He quotes the Old Testament over and over and over again, where Mark and Luke do not. Now, he's quoting Jeremiah 31:15. It's about an account in the life of Rachel. "A sob was heard in Ramah, weeping and great wailing, Rachel weeping for her children, and she refused to be comforted because they were gone." Now, Ramah is right on the border between the northern ten tribes and the southern ten tribes, or if you please, between Ephraim and Judah. Now, the reason that Rachel is used as an example here, back in Genesis 48:7, we find that she was buried in Bethlehem, or close to it. She was Jacob's favorite wife. She is the mother of Joseph and Benjamin. Now, Joseph, as you know, his two sons inherited his place, and they're Ephraim and Manasseh, who are the largest two tribes of the northern kingdom. Benjamin became part of the southern tribe of Judah. So in this one lady, we somehow summarize all of the Jewish nation. Now, we know that this was quoted by Jeremiah when the northern nation was taken captive. This was quoted as Rachel weeping for her children because the city of Ramah was the focal point of getting all the people together before they went into captivity. And so it's quoted here as an example of the children have been lost. Now, those in verse 19 where it says, "But after Herod died, an angel of the Lord in a dream appeared to Joseph in Egypt and said, 'Wake up, tenderly take the child and his mother, and make a trip to the land of Israel, for those who sought the child's life are dead.'" Well, he did that, but he didn't go back to Bethlehem because Archelaus, Herod the Great's son, was in his place, and he was a pretty cruel thing himself. So Joseph went back to his hometown. Now, his hometown is Nazareth. Now, look what God did to fulfill that prophecy of birth in Bethlehem, but being raised in Nazareth. When Mary was over 9 months pregnant, God used a Roman emperor to issue an edict that all men had to go back to the town of their birth to register for a tax. So Joseph had to go back to where he was born, Bethlehem. Okay? He took Mary with him. Why? She's pregnant? My goodness, think about all those miles on a donkey. Croak! But he took her, didn't leave her with relatives, and therefore she had her child in Bethlehem. Now it's time to go back to Nazareth. Why? Because of the prophecy again. Notice in verse 22 where it says, "And he went down to a town called Nazareth, and he made his home there, so the saying of the prophet was fulfilled, 'He shall be called a Nazarene.'" Now we have no place in the Old Testament that this particular quote comes from. It's just not there anywhere at all. Now, we know that Jesus was called a Nazarene or from Nazareth. Many have said that possibly the background is from Isaiah chapter 11, verse 1. You see, the name Nazareth and the Hebrew name for branch is very close. And some think when it says a branch from the root of Jesse, that it's a play on this word Nazareth, because that word also means branch. But I personally believe that it's a reference to Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1. Now, in Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1, we have a very unusual prophecy for Jews because it deals with a universal element of a Gentile area. Let me read it to you. "Later on, he shall make its way glorious by way of the sea on the other side of Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles." This was a prediction of the area of Jesus Christ's ministry. Now, for a Jew to be from Nazareth was like spitting, you know. In John chapter 7, verse 41, the Jews said, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth, come out of Galilee?" That was a very unusual place for a Jewish leader to come because it was considered a Gentile area. And yet that was predicted by Isaiah 750 years before the fact that Jesus' ministry would be around Galilee, the province and the sea. And that's where Nazareth is. Now, Nazareth was no backwoods town. It was right on the major caravan route of that day. Jesus must have had a tremendous childhood of seeing all the world meet there and the caravans come to town and that kind of thing. So we can't be sure where that quote's coming from. Maybe it's a group of sayings from the Old Testament prophets that was an oral tradition. We don't know, but Matthew quotes that. Well, here we have the account of the wise men and their dealings. Let me go back through this and see if we can pick out some things that'll be very helpful for us. First of all, I want you to realize that this whole procedure of Bethlehem is a fulfillment of Old Testament prophecy. I marvel at all that God did to accomplish this. Joseph being betrothed to Mary and him being from the city of Bethlehem and the line of David, all that's involved in this. The decree from the emperor, all that's involved in this. The wise men coming who really weren't Jewish at all, apparently. And all that was involved in their trying to find the child and Herod, you know, trying to get him killed. Many have said, why didn't God just stop Herod? We really can't understand the ways of God. His ways are so far beyond ours, and the way he works things out doesn't seem to be the way we would do it. And yet we know that God is in control of history. The minute detail that he works history according to his plan can be seen so clearly in Matthew chapter 2, when you compare it especially with Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1, and you compare it with Micah chapter 5, verse 2 through 6, it just fits together with unbelievable clarity and preciseness. Now, this whole idea about the star and the gifts, there's a lot of symbolism here. We must be very careful in reading too much into these accounts. It's so easy for us to come to a conclusion, and then we make our conclusion the same weight as we do the Bible itself. Friends, much tradition has clung to this story of the wise men. What I would say to you is, make sure you read the Bible to balance your tradition. You know, things developing several hundred years later do not have the authority of what Matthew wrote. We've got to be very careful that all that we do in the church is not based on tradition, no matter how long we've done it, or how much we like it, or how well it works. We must base all of our theology and our historical understanding of Christ from the biblical text alone. And the prophecy here about Jesus going to be a shepherd of the people is a beautiful combination of the prophecies concerning King David and now the ultimate of the divinic line, the Messiah. We move on down, and it seems strange to us that God would have his son flee to Egypt. You know, he could have done it many other ways. But again, he's trying to make an analogy between the nation of Israel and their sojourn in Egypt and him delivering them by his own power and him delivering through a dream his son. Now, to us, it seems very strange. But remember, the Bible is an ancient Oriental book. It is not a modern 20th century American novel. And therefore, we must look at it in the light of the day it was written and of the authors that wrote it. And they're Jewish. They think Jewish. And that it would just fit right in with them. I think we see something of man's foolishness in Herod trying to stop all of God's plans, which is absolutely impossible. I can't imagine what these mothers must have thought when their children died. And it seems so cruel to us. But many have called these the first Christian martyrs, but that's really not true. Children aren't martyrs. They didn't know what they were doing. They just got caught up in an evil circumstance. And finally, then we have Jesus coming to Nazareth to be his hometown. And that's where he grew up, and all about Jesus' childhood is left out. From chapter 3 on, many, many years of silence. We know nothing about what he did. Many apocryphal books were written, but they're very strange, and books that would surprise you if you read them.